This is AgriPulse Open Mic, sponsored by the crop insurance industry. Protecting over 272 million acres of farmland across the U.S., crop insurance is key to the financial stability of America's farmers and ranchers, enabling them to supply our country with food and fiber. Crop insurance, providing peace of mind now and for the future of agriculture.
Larry, welcome to AgriPulse Open Mic.
Thank you, Stuart.
If I had a nickel for every time I have heard the words sustainable or sustainability over particularly the last 5 years, I would be a pretty rich fellow today. When you mention those words to people involved in agriculture, often what you will get back from them is there can be no sustainability in farming without economic sustainability. You have been talking to the public about its views on sustainability and what that word means to it. What have you been finding out?
Well, I've been finding out, for one thing, that it means a lot more to the consumer public or the voting public, however you see the public. It means a lot more than just the environmental factor in sustainability. A parallel I would draw would be to the way the word or the framed debate about being pro-environmental entered the conversation of consumers 20 years ago, 30 years ago or more. Some of this is a matter of framing of an issue. Some of it is a matter of feeling that being pro-sustainability is like being pro-environmental. There don't appear to be any immediate downsides, and the opposite, which is understood to be unsustainable, seems like a fairly negative thing to be lining up behind. So part of this is syntax, and only a very little bit of it at the moment is economic sustainability. It's very much more a social and attitudinal shift, as well as a behavior shift in buying of food and viewing of agriculture.
The 18 to 34-year-old demographic set, what are their expectations about what sustainability in agriculture should entail?
Well, I don't know that it breaks down as neatly as a specific age group. I mean, when I look at the focus groups and surveys that I do myself and that I see others do, I think the larger demographic perspective is to say that when you look at age from baby boomers on down, education level, call it higher than normal, disposable income higher than normal, I think what we're seeing is a growing sense or a growing support of an idea that sustainability as opposed to pure industrial production, it needs to have its moment of debate and needs to have at least a clarification of how agriculture proceeds for the future. Part of this is tied up in climate change and environmental concerns. Part of this is tied up in diet, health, and nutrition concerns. But some of the young in that age group that you asked about, 18 to 34, are being exposed to things they read, things they hear, things they see chefs talking about on cable TV, which is leading them to rethink what agriculture is all about.
In the larger public context, do consumers equate sustainable agriculture with a more holistic approach to agriculture?
I think they do. I mean, I think part of this is the success so far of people outside agriculture doing a better job of framing the debate about sustainability than people inside agriculture have been doing. I mean, if you were to ask, you know, does the general public, do consumers when they go shopping, understand the economics of a sustainable farm? The answer is no. But at the point I often make when I talk to agricultural colleagues is, did the public grasp the science or economics of ALAR on apples? No, they didn't. But is ALAR still used on apples? No, it's not. You know, public doesn't understand the details and the nuance. It doesn't stop people from being concerned about an issue, even lining up behind an issue, without the level of detail that people in agriculture wish they might have.
Assuming that the words sustainable and sustainability are here with us for the foreseeable future, what are the implications of this movement, these expectations of consumers for agriculture?
Well, I mean, I think the sometimes instinctive pushback from mainstream agriculture when they hear people talking about sustainability or sustainable agriculture is to respond that agriculture has always been about sustainability in the way it's always been about stewardship. The problem is that the pushback to that is that the implied message is we produce your food cheap, don't hassle us about how it gets done, which is a less and less persuasive argument. And so my general sense is that as this sustainability debate continues to unfold, and particularly as people outside of agriculture continue to do a very good job of framing the issue better than most people inside agriculture do, there'll be growing pressure on conventional agriculture anyway to explain itself and modify practices and form coalitions and open themselves up to transparency in ways that might be uncomfortable.
Larry, what's your take on why agriculture has been unable to this point to really come to the public with a consistent message, more clearly defined about what it is it's doing and why?
Well, I think part of that is that this is a long-running debate within agriculture, I know, from the various forums that I've participated in. There's no such thing as agriculture speaking with a single voice. There is not a guru of agriculture who speaks on behalf of all commodities, all crops, plant, animal, and otherwise. And the specialties within agriculture are not generally public communication, which is not the case for celebrity chefs, food writers, physicians, health advocates, etc. They specialize in communicating with the public, and at the moment they're doing a far better job than what looks from the outside to be a fairly fragmented agricultural community.
The modern local food movement has Michael Pollan speaking on its behalf. Small farm advocates have authors such as Wendell Berry speaking on their behalf. Does the commercial agriculture segment in this country need a singular figure to speak on its behalf?
I don't know if it needs a singular figure. The first answer I would give is that it certainly doesn't have one now. And the perspective that the consuming public takes is that there's no resolution of fragmented points of view within agriculture. I don't know whether a single spokesperson on behalf of agriculture in general can even be envisioned. But the direct answer to your question is there certainly is no agricultural equivalent or mainstream agricultural equivalent to Michael Pollan. Whether it's lobbying organizations or commodity groups or any other, I think the history is that they speak on behalf of a constituency and not on behalf of agriculture. And I think that's part of the challenge.
And given that the sustainable advocates or opponents of modern agriculture, put it that way, have the bigger megaphone today, is it more likely that modern agricultural production in this country, unless it gets its act together, is going to be resigned to the fact that they're going to have to probably deal with more regulation of the way they do their business on their farms because they're not out there telling the story the way it should be told on their behalf?
That's a reasonable forecast to make. I mean, I might argue with you on whether proponents of sustainable agriculture are necessarily opponents of modern agriculture. I think some are, some are not. Some are looking for modification of some practices but are not necessarily opposed to the scale of modern agriculture, and I think that's part of the problem. There has been a tendency, I think, in mainstream modern ag to lump all critics and question askers together in a manner that demonizes them as somehow either kooks, crazies, opponents of modernism, et cetera, when they don't necessarily all fall into that basket.
Which is a good segue to the following question. Is there any common ground here that both sides can claim?
I think there's lots of room for common ground. I mean, you see little experiments being tested all the time in the search for common ground. There's a news wire about how McDonald's and the World Wildlife Fund are getting together to try to discuss the future of sustainable beef production. There are tiptoes around this. Sometimes it's on one food product at a time. Sometimes it's regional. Sometimes it's more confrontational than others. But I think there are dozens, if not scores, of experiments on for finding common ground between mainstream agriculture, we'll call it innovative agriculture or alternative agriculture, and various consumer groups, political groups, etc. They won't all succeed, but they're being tried.
When you have the opportunity to present your research to farm audiences, what kind of reaction do you get?
I've got some denial. I've got some eyes rolling. I've got some hostile glares, but I've also got a number of people who have said, this is not necessarily what I like to hear, but it's something that agriculture needs to hear, that ours is not the only voice, that consumers, whether they're concerned about healthfulness or environmental concerns or social concerns, have a place at the table, and we can't push them away from the table. They're our ultimate customers. So I've gotten it all, Stuart. I've had people basically politely ask me to shut my mouth when reporting these non-ag perspectives in agricultural forums, and I've had people thank me for bringing them news from the outside world in a fairly benign, I hope, way.
We've been talking about sustainable agriculture with Larry Kagan, president of Kagan Research Associates. Larry, thanks so much for joining us on AgriPulse Open Mic.
Thank you very much, Stuart.
AgriPulse Open Mic has been sponsored by the crop insurance industry, protecting over 272 million acres of farmland across the U.S. Crop insurance is key to the financial stability of America's farmers and ranchers, enabling them to supply our country with food and fiber. Crop insurance, providing peace of mind now and for the future of agriculture.